Welcome to another Homespun C-SPAN, continuing a series on low-power FM hearings in Congress. Today begins the question and answer session in earnest. We gave you a taste last week with one of the questions in this round, following the main testimony on LPFM. The question last week was a sneaky one, which was, how will releasing LPFM from congressional restrictions imposed in 2001 harm translators? This is sneaky because NPR and the major religious networks take a very oligopolistic approach and build translator networks instead of local stations. NPR and the major religious networks want to maintain what is called fringe listeners that they are not allowed to demand protection for by regulation. Translators are almost always out in the fringe listening area in order to translate the first signal to a second frequency, so that the local listeners in a mountain valley or distant place that is hard for listeners to hear the primary signal can hear the programming on a second frequency. For example, WNRN, a community indie rock station out of Charlottesville, has a translator at 103.1 FM out in Midlothian. WRAR could have placed a translator near, say, Regency and Ridge Theaters, the old Ridge Theater, to hit the West End better. But in both cases, both of those locations receive the primary community radio signal rather weakly. Those are fringe listening areas for WRAR and WNRN. The other reason that this is a sneaky question is that the input frequencies for translators are protected from other translators and LPFM. And that is what the guest speaker from the FCC, Mr. Peter Doyle, replied, that the translators are protected from interference, even in their distant fringe reception areas, from LPFM or other translator interference. But by asking the question, it suggested that those networks are threatened by LPFM. Well, they are threatened, but not with technical interference. They're threatened with the potential of competition for their audiences. What NPR National still fails to see, apparently, is that their true competition are smart cell phones and other mobile internet receiving devices like the iPhone and air cards for your laptop that allow you to take a podcast or digital audio stream from the internet and plug that into your earphones or car radio and bypass the entire local AM or FM band. So a greater variety on the local FM or AM band actually increases the likelihood that listeners will scan around the terrestrial broadcast bands and not be so frustrated by the stunted programming developed by oligopolistic networks, NPR, commercial or religious, and simply abandon the entire broadcast system completely. Yes, and that includes abandoning the latest boondoggle called HD radio that is just the same old management with leftover frequency, unless it is that rare station that actually wants to serve a wider and more diverse audience. They will only broadcast more of the same old crud that pushed people into pirate radio, LPFM, and now internet podcasts and streaming bitcasts in the first place. That question about translators needing protection from potentially expanded LPFM service is also sneaky, because NPR would rather you got an HD radio receiver and let a minor variation on a theme from the mainstream NPR networks be your satisfaction for a dose of "and now for something completely different." But in most cases, it will be another case of meet the new boss, same as the old boss. The same old oligopolistic networks, be they commercial, NPR, or religious, have failed to provide the variety of programming available and demanded by people. The evidence is all around you with the growing ubiquitousness of MP3 players and streaming mobile internet devices that play streams like Pandora. It's not that MP3 sounds better, it just is better in terms of serving the programming desires of the producers and listeners. It's the same problem with our current healthcare system. The current for-profit insurance system are wasting billions on massive management overhead and failing larger and larger segments of the U.S. population, even taking your money and then denying coverage. Both the health insurance networks and the broadcast networks have only themselves to blame for continuing the abuse, just as people will no longer quietly crawl into a corner and die while others get health treatment, so also people have taken the alternatives of internet and MP3 players, even though the sound quality is often inferior. It's better than a death of culture and mind provided by the current majority of service providers. This kind of abuse results in the same reaction as the abuse by the King of England. Eventually, there are tea parties, and now for something completely different. And so we begin the question and answer session for the June 11th hearings in Congress. improvements in the condition of LPFM stations that could enable little WRIRs in every urbanized area are being considered right now in Congress with H.R. 1147, the Local Community Radio Act of 2009. As an individual fan of freedom of speech and the value of unheard voices, I ask you to help every city have an LPFM like WRIR, or perhaps even better. You can ask your friends and family to call their Congress critter to become a co-sponsor of H.R. 1147, the Local Community Radio Act of 2009. Please note the disclaimer at the beginning of these shows. This is just my personal opinion acknowledged by the Constitution. And so, without further ado, here's the first segment of the question and answer in earnest of the hearings of the U.S. House Subcommittee on Communications, Technology, and the Internet. The three bills all folded together into this one hearing are H.R. 1133, the Family Telephone Connection Protection Act of 2009, which you'll hear a question about just as at the end of this intro. And also considered is H.R. 1084, 1084, the Commercial Advertisement Loudness Mitigation Act, CALM Act, and H.R. 1147, the Local Community Radio Act of 2009. This was recorded Thursday, June 11th in the Rayburn House Office Building. We pick up with a question on the high rates charged to prisoners and their families for making phone calls out of prison. This is the Subcommittee on Communications, Technology, and the Internet.
Mr. Donovan and Mr. Starzynski, you refer in your testimony with respect to volume controls on commercials on television programs to a forthcoming recommended practice. I believe you said that will be forthcoming in September, and that your practice will address squarely the need to make sure that the volume on commercials is not excessive as compared to the regular broadcast
That's
programming.
That's right, Mr. Chairman.
Volumes. Yep. To what extent do you anticipate that this practice will be adopted by television broadcasters once it is published? And I would ask you to make that projection based on whatever past experience you have with similar kinds of standards that have been recommended to the broadcast industry. Mr. Starzynski?
Oh, okay.
Well, or Mr. Donovan, do you want to, whoever.
I think as a general matter, when you have a recommended practice that has gone through the industry standard-setting body, which is what ATSC is, and in fact, in many instances, there's more technical detail in that standard than in others that were referred to, such as England and other countries.
I understand that, it will be technically detailed, but the right. question is, to what extent will it be put into practice and adopted by the local broadcasters?
I think it will be. I think it clearly becomes the norm for the industry, and the industry...
Is that based on past experience?
It's based on past experiences working through the ATSC and industry standards.
Is there any enforcement to make sure that that happens?
The enforcement becomes self-enforcing. In other words, you have...
Is there any monitoring that takes place to make sure that it's being complied with by those who at least in principle adopt it?
Absolutely. There's monitoring that happens when...
Who does the monitoring?
We do it internally. I can speak for NBC, and it happens at the point at which the content comes into the building. So it gets monitored extensively. And the thing that it also does is it applies a contemporary monitoring device. One, you may remember the FCC said we can't go farther with this a whole bunch of years ago because we don't have the technology to do it. We have it now. So that technology is an international standard. It works very well, and it can't be gamed. So there's no issue where you may have someone trying to game the system. It really reads it. And it works the way our ears work this time. It's not dealing with just the electronics. It's dealing with perceptual levels. And we have every reason to apply this and to move forward with it because we agree with you. The problem is out there. We need to fix it.
All right. Well, do you have confidence that your standard will be followed, that it will be monitored, that it can be effective?
Yes, I
certainly do. Yes, sir.
Thank you for those answers. Let me take just a moment to address the question of payphone rates that are imposed in correctional institutions. I'm exceeding my time. The chair will be very generous with other members in terms of their time to ask questions also. Mr. Hopfinger, let me pose a question to you. You've heard Mr. Crow testify that sometimes the successful bidder in contracts to provide these telecommunication services to inmates will be the bidder who offers the highest commission to the correctional authority, not the bidder who offers the lowest priced service. Is that correct? And if it is correct, how's that justified?
Well, Chairman Boucher, I would say that today that is not necessarily the case, as the sheriff's associations and the other associations have put forth mandates or recommendations that rates for inmates be just and reasonable and for the inmates and their people that are paying for these calls. I will tell you, in the bidding systems today, the majority of our bids, one of the criteria is for low rates, but low rates in anticipation with all the other safety and security requirements that the system is needed. And Mr. Crow mentioned a few states where the rates are lower. I will say that in addition to the states that Mr. Crow mentioned, there are additional states where rates are in fact coming down. And that is as a result of the way the system is working today.
All right. Mr. Crow, let me ask you to respond, if you like, to the answer Mr. Hopfinger just provided. And additionally, if you would, Sheriff Goad, in his testimony, talked about the fact that the commissions that are received by the correctional authorities are often applied toward services for inmates, such as rehabilitative services. What is your view about whether those services should be financed by the commissions on telephone calls as compared perhaps to government simply providing through direct appropriations the money necessary for those essential services?
Mr. Chairman. It's true, just turning to Mr. Hopfinger's comments first, it is true that in some states the rates have come down as a result of decisions made by either the state legislature or correctional authorities. But the point is that the majority of states, you still have, and other jails and prison systems, you still have exorbitant rates where the bidding system has not been reformed. And you have violations of, and all these other states, violations of the Communications Act because they're charging unreasonable rates.
Okay, come to the second part.
And in terms of the prison welfare programs, I really do think that there's no justification for imposing a regressive tax on the users of those programs, which is what the commission rates are. If there's a necessary program, it really ought to be funded out of the budget. And
out of the government's budget,
yes,
of which the facility is operated.
Yes, and I think things that are more voluntary, that are more discretionary, really the problem, as I said, is that you're taking the choice away from the prisoners and their families as to whether they would rather have reasonable rates.
Thank you very much,
yes.
Mr. Crow. My time has expired. The gentleman from Florida, Mr. Stearns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Kelsey, in your opening statement, you had mentioned that Australia, Brazil, France, Israel, Russia, and the United Kingdom have already adopted legislation to control this burst of sound that comes from advertisements. How has it worked? Do you know? And first of all, how long ago did they adopt this legislation? How long ago did they adopt it?
I believe most of the countries in the last few years, and I would highlight in particular in Australia, the trade group that represents the broadcasters there went a step further and offered technical assistance to broadcasters. And many in Australia and UK's law in particular are very similar to the measure that Representative Eshoo has put forth.
Okay. And have they been successful?
I don't know that. I could get back to you, yeah.
Mr. Starzynski, so the argument is, okay, we've adopted legislation. We don't know if it solved the problem. It's similar to what the gentlelady from California is off. So the question to you is, when would you think that you would have the solution here? You said September?
Well, we have the recommended practice that will be voted on by the membership this summer and released in September. We think that'll go well, and that's through the ATSC. And we've got a lot of technology happening as we speak. I cited some new technology we're putting on the air at WNBC, hopefully, fingers crossed, within the next couple of days, that will apply a technical solution to the problem without having the creative folks who are very concerned about the quality of their sound get back to us in kind of a with backlash on us altering their sound. So technology's gotten us to a point where we can apply good loudness practices but not alter the creativity of our suppliers.
Perhaps, the gentlelady's legislation has urged you on here and given a little bit more incentive to do it.
There's no question that it has. The awareness level in the industry right now is tremendous.
And so with that in mind, perhaps the way to solve this problem is, because Mr. Kelsey's saying these countries adopt it, but they couldn't do anything without the technical advice of people like yourself. So the legislation might pass, but nothing's going to happen without you folks. So you folks are on the issue right now, so it looks like you're ready with the solution. And then that would be sometime this year you'd have a solution, and then right. We could assume that would be promulgated throughout the broadcast industry?
That's right. As I had said before, I don't.
What assurance would we have that after you had the solution that everybody would adopt it?
With the level of awareness that we have right now, and we're not disputing the fact that there's a problem out there. We all know we want to fix it.
Now the question is, after you have a solution, how soon would everybody adopt your solution, and what assurance would we have that they would without legislation?
The assurance is they definitely want to solve the problem. And to answer your time frame on this, it's going to vary based on the sophistication of the broadcast group or the operator that you're speaking about. In terms of NBC Universal, with all of our resources, we've been able to attack this for the past couple of years directly, but it is taking us a little while to get there because we require technology to let us do it. And you also need to understand the proper ways to apply the standard. I think that the rollout will be a little bit different across the board as it pertains to different levels of sophistication in the industry, only because of budgets and that kind of thing. But the key to all of it now is we have a roadmap that will be in place to help everyone out with this. There's no more ambiguity.
Okay, so if you were writing this legislation, you said, okay, give us a little hiatus here. How long before we could say, okay, you haven't done anything, we're going to pass this legislation?
Oh, I hope that it never comes to that. I hope that what happens, you find that we self-regulate this. And you know, somebody said this before, and I think it's really true. Engineers want to solve problems.
Sure.
And I think the experts are on it, and they want to solve this issue for you guys, for all of America.
You are hearing the question and answer session in earnest now on three bills being discussed June 11, 2009, in the Subcommittee on Communications Technology and the Internet. That is H.R. 1133, the Family Telephone Connection Protection Act of 2009, and H.R. 1084, the Commercial Advertisement Loudness Mitigation Act, CALM Act, and then the big one, H.R. 1147, the Local Community Radio Act of 2009. As an individual fan of freedom of speech and the value of unheard voices, I ask you to help every city have an LPFM like WRAR, or perhaps even better. You can ask your friends and family from around the world to call their Congress critter to become a co-sponsor of H.R. 1147, the Local Community Radio Act of 2009. Please note the disclaimer at the beginning of these shows. This is just my personal opinion, acknowledged by the Constitution. This was recorded on Thursday, June 11th, in the Rayburn House office building.
Mr. Doyle, Mr. Beasley, the question is that the FCC went out and hired an independent contractor, the MITRE Corporation, to determine if there was harmful interference. If low-power FM stations don't cause harmful interference, is what basically this independent report said, then the question is, why do we need Section 5 of the bill, which requires the FCC to retain third adjacent channel protection for full power non-commercial FM stations that broadcasting services via a subcarrier frequency? So, I mean, if you have an independent report that says there's no big problem, why would we need Section 5? You dispute the independent MITRE, you dispute it.
We believe that there are flaws within the MITRE.
Do you have an independent report of your own that
disputes it? The NAB has provided a report that outlines.
Ms. Beasley, please turn your microphone on.
It is on.
Okay.
I guess I'm
not
talking close enough. The NAB has provided a report that outlines the flaws in the MITRE report.
Okay.
That being said, if I may on the MITRE report, I'm not an engineer, but based on my understanding, the MITRE report reviewed 7 sites. And we can just take away 2 of the sites, if you will, because one site was related to a reading service and one test related to translators. So there were 5 other sites, and there was significant interference found at these 5 sites relative to Walkmans and boomboxes. Now, Ms. Lianza referred to South Florida stations, people you know, going through, riding through hurricanes, if you will. I am from South Florida. I was there when I was there when Hurricane Wilma was, and as well Hurricane Charley. And it's important to note that people do not go out and they don't listen to their car radios.
No, I understand the case. I understand. Just we're just trying to understand if the FCC has an independent contractor says no big problem, why suddenly you're disputing it.
Well, we do, and it's on record that we have, and there are there is a report.
Let me just go then.
Could I provide some FCC input into that? Radio reading services are delivered on subcarrier frequencies. These tend to be more fragile than the main transmission. And in fact, the MITRE report did find a limited amount of interference to the subcarriers that a radio reading service would be carried on. And the commission, on its own, in developing these rules, imposed this requirement on low-power stations to ensure that this vital service would not be degraded by low-power stations.
Thank you. Mr. Crow, I guess a standard question in this issue is a constitutional right for an inmate to have access to a phone, is that yes or no? I don't know. Does a inmate have to have access to a phone? Just yes or no. Do you know?
That really hasn't played a role in the FCC proceedings, and so I don't have a position
and
on that.
And is it the right that they have to have rates that are low? I mean, I think we'd all like to have them have rates, but it's, you know, generally when I go out to buy something, it's what the market will bear. And so what we're doing as a government is dictating that the rates have to be low to give inmates this right to have access to the phone. The families don't have to accept these collect calls. They can come in and see them, or perhaps if they're geographically a long ways away, perhaps they could restrict their calls, because if you make it a lot cheaper, they're going to call more, and perhaps it might even be the same rate. So this $400, $395 a month you talk about, if the rate's a lot cheaper, perhaps they're going to make more calls, and they'll still rack up to $395. So at some point, somebody's going to have to make a consumer decision. We don't want to pay this. Mr. Goad, Sheriff Goad, your argument is basically that you use these excess funds for rehabilitation and services to help the inmates. In your opinion, I think the chairman touched on it, do you believe that the government should provide these, or do you think that it should be done the way you're doing it?
Well, I think it should be done the way we're doing. I think in these hard economic times, we're constantly being cut on budgets. We find that these funds allow us to provide many of these indigent inmates with the services they need, along with undergarments, socks,
Your biggest
Bibles.
Argument, I thought, was the security.
Yes.
When you talked about that, you're saying if these somehow the government stepped in and prevented you from having the rates that you feel are appropriate, then you would not be able to provide the survey, the recording, the watch on terrorist lists and things like that.
Correct. Criminal investigations.
Criminal investigation, which are part of our national security.
Absolutely.
And depending upon the inmate, whether he's there for the severity of the crime, would impact how much attention you have to do for that inmate and his telephone call.
Yes, sir. They even circumvent some of our phone systems, where they'll actually do three-way calling. They'll call someone outside the facility, get several people in line as a party call, and proceed to conduct business as usual.
Yeah, a lot of these calls are not, shall we say, felicitous calls. These are calls with intent to perhaps commit more crime or to do witness tampering or things like that, is what
Correct.
You're saying.
We've had intimidation of witnesses. We've also had perpetuating other crimes.
You've got to have the funds to do that security survey, in effect, or we're really putting our citizens at danger.
Yes, sir. That is correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Just to yield myself a brief moment or two just to clarify a couple of things on the record. This notion of a free market, I don't know who can answer this. A free market, would that dictate that if someone has a calling charge, collect call charge, 630% higher than the market? Tell me a little bit about what the family can do to shop around for a lower rate when someone is making a collect call to them from a prison. Perhaps, Mr. Crow, maybe you can explain how the free market works in this instance.
Well, there is no free market in prison calling. There's the exclusive service provider who provides all the calls, all the calling, and you have no choice. And so because of that, if we're going to continue with exclusive service contracts, the rates have to be regulated. The FCC has broad authority to regulate interstate telecommunications, including, and there are no exceptions for prisoners. Section 201B of the Act requires that rates be just and reasonable, with no exceptions. And the families who are paying for these collect calls should have the benefit of that federal law as much as anyone else.
Right. I think that most members of this committee, and apparently a gentleman from Florida, would agree we should have the free market. Let's let market forces be brought to bear. Let's let one more than one operator. Let's let 800 numbers function. And I think that's the point. Mr. Doyle, you're recognized for 5 minutes.
Parliamentary inquiry. Don't we go back and forth?
Certainly we do.
We just spoke.
Was that a line of questioning? I thought it was just a point of clarification.
Would you like?
I think he asked his question.
If the gentleman insists, the gentleman from Nebraska is recognized for 5 minutes.
It was very odd that you were asking the question.
Thank you. Let me start with the three on this side and just work down the table. Let me just give an editorial comment more than a question. And certainly I think the least sympathetic characters are the ones that are in prison. But there is something distasteful about taking advantage of them, too, which I think is the underlying premise for this act. Mr. Hopfinger, you made a good point that there are security concerns and technologies that have to be woven in here that add to the expense. I think that's extremely fair and a good point. I guess the issue is then how much of a gap is there when you add in the cost of this additional technologies, where it's just becoming the, in essence, I guess, the slush fund for the jails or the prisons.
Tune in next week for the continuation of the grilling on LPFM and two other topics. The three bills are H.R. 1133, the Family Telephone Connection Protection Act of 2009, regarding the high rates alleged to be charged to prisoners so that they may talk to their family and hopefully be somewhat more rehabilitated. Keep in mind that about 90% of prisoners will not stay in prison for life. They will be back out on the street. So any ability their family has to help them reconnect to community will reduce crime. And H.R. 1084, the Commercial Advertisement Loudness Mitigation Act, the CALM Act. I believe the only reason they're worried about this now is that we can bypass the commercials. We can download TV shows. We can watch cable and not listen to their overly compressed commercials that sound loud and are jarring. And H.R. 1147, the Local Community Radio Act of 2009. And this was recorded Thursday, June 11, 2009, in the Rayburn House office building in the Subcommittee on Communications, Technology, and the Internet. As an individual fan of freedom of speech and the value of unheard voices, I ask you to help every city have an LPFM like WRIR, or perhaps even better. You can ask your friends and family from across the globe to call their Congress critters, become co-sponsor of H.R. 1147, the Local Community Radio Act of 2009. Please note the disclaimer at the beginning of these shows. This is just my personal opinion, acknowledged by the Constitution. Thank you for listening to another special series of Homespun C-SPAN on the congressional hearings covering LPFM